Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism. Of course, we're talking about Lake of the Woods. I don't think anybody does it better. Joe is super dialed in to what's going on up on Lake of the Woods and just the size and scale of the resort offerings and the fishing accommodations and the fishing reports and ice reports. So this is a full-length conversation, and we're going to talk about what makes Lake of the Woods great as an ice fishing destination here in the Midwest. So let's get to it here. We've got Joe Henry on the JMO Podcast. As we prepare for the upcoming ice fishing season, making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to SummitFishingEquipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Sealcraft brings innovation and revolution to ice fishing. If you fish early or late ice anywhere, or maybe you fish big reservoirs where ice conditions are constantly changing, basically anywhere that ice can be dangerous, Sealcraft is the solution for safe transport across the ice. For pictures and videos of the brand new Sealcrafts in action, you can find them on Facebook and Instagram. Those links are in the description of this podcast. What is kind of the status update, or even just kind of the recap of how things have been going as 2025 here is coming to a close up there on Lake of the Woods, Joe. And I'm letting you fully out of the cage here. You can go any direction you want to go. You've got no leash whatsoever. You don't got to stay on any of my topics either. I definitely want to give you full freedom on that, man, because I just enjoy hearing you talk about these things and wherever it goes. Go ahead.
That's awesome. Thanks, Taylor. Thanks for inviting me on again. It's a real honor to be on your podcast, of course. And you know, there's so much, right? There's so much to talk about when it comes to ice fishing, the industry, you know, where it's been and where we've come to, Lake of the Woods, the many nuances of the Lake of the Woods, the different areas, the different species, spearing, fishing, walleyes, pike, crappies. I mean, there's so much. And so I really do appreciate it. It's kind of fun talking about it. You know what? 2025 was a great, great fishing year for Lake of the Woods. Our lake is healthy, thank goodness. And, you know, we work really close with the Minnesota DNR. And, you know, being a large lake in Minnesota, we have what are called large lake specialists. So they're able every single year to go out and do seining of the sand beaches to find out what kind of hatch did we have, finding the young either walleye and perch and stuff. And then they do their annual netting and do the annual electroshocking in different spots. They have different pike surveys they do in some of the back bays. They do a different back bay every year. And you know, they do a lot of stuff with lake sturgeon. And they really are dialed in, but they also have that historical perspective because they've been doing it for so many years. And so they're really good at what they do. They keep a close eye on regs, on the fishery, what they think the fishery, the current state of the fishery is. And our fishery is really, really healthy, thank goodness. And you know, the majority of fishing on Lake of the Woods, you know, most people are going after walleyes. And, you know, the walleye capital of the world. And, of course, everybody knows that's a marketing slogan. We are one of the walleye capitals of the world, with all due respects to, you know, Erie and other great fishing lakes in the Midwest across the walleye belt. You know, I always have to laugh. I guided on Lake Erie for a while when I lived down in Ohio, and I got very good friends down there. I still fish an annual tournament on Lake Erie called the Demeters, and I fish with some buddies of mine who are all charter captains. And you know, man, do I get flack whenever I put Lake of the Woods, the walleye capital of the world, because a lot of very, very proud anglers on Lake Erie. In fact, I think on our Facebook page or something, or I can't remember if it's our Facebook page or if it's our website, but some of those Lake Erie anglers are so passionate, they jump on our page and they'd give us a 1-star rating and say, you know, Lake Erie is a walleye capital, not Lake of the Woods, you know. Yeah. I'm like, oh my goodness. So, but anyway, with all perspective, you know, we have a lot of walleyes and we have a lot of big walleyes. I mean, a couple takeaways from the season. Fishing was phenomenal, like all open water season long. Last winter, our ice fishing was one of the best years we've had. And of course, that continued with open water. I mean, it was just incredible, incredible open water season. And one of the takeaways was kind of cool. You know, we get some walleye tournaments up on Lake of the Woods, and, you know, Lake of the Woods Tourism, we really promote the tournaments that are a catch, record, release tournaments. We would prefer to have those versus the tournaments where they bring those fish in and weigh them, because, you know, a lot of those big fish are going to die. You know, you bring them up to surface water, you bring them around a live well, you drive them 20 miles across Lake of the Woods. Yeah. But most of those fish will die. So we prefer the catch, record, release. Well, with the onset of forward facing sonar on Lake of the Woods, I mean, these anglers are bringing in, you know, whether they're using the Fish Donkey app or taking pictures on a stick and letting that fish go, but they're catching fish that are phenomenal. That forward-facing sonar is allowing them to target the really, really big walleyes. They're going to let the little 25, 26 inches go. They're not even going to cast at them. They're only going to target those fish they think are the 29s, 30s, 31s. And, you know, what's happening is, I mean, we had some winning bags of fish this year. One of the days of a tournament, I think it was a Minnesota tournament trail, we had two anglers. They brought their best 5 walleyes to the scale. And those walleyes weighed over 60 pounds. Mm-hmm. That's over a 12-pound average per fish. I mean, that's unheard of. Nowhere. No, I will say that you know, that was on a Fish Donkey app, and I think that the Fish Donkey app is just a little bit liberal. You know, a 30-inch walleye normally would be about 10 pounds. Maybe on the Fish Donkey app, it'd be 10, 7, 5, or 11. So you maybe take a couple pounds off that. But nonetheless, these are all legitimate 11-pound fish.
Yeah.
Nowhere. I don't think there's anywhere in the walleye belt that you're seeing tournaments where you got 5 fish coming in for that kind of weight. So we have a huge population of trophy fish in our lake, as well as everything down to the teeny weeny little fish that you're like, I can't believe that little walleye got that hook in its mouth. You know, so we have everything, and that's good. That's a healthy fishery, all different size structure. You know, one of the reasons we have such big walleyes is not every lake has big walleyes like we do. You got to have certain things in your lake to have big walleyes. First off, you got to have the right gene pool. And we got the big fish gene. There's walleye lakes that I fish in tournaments that if you catch a big walleye, it's a 26 or 27. That's just the way it is. Nothing wrong with the lake. It just, that's the gene pool, you know. We have the big walleye gene pool, and we're thankful for it. I think the other thing is we have a plethora of forage. So and not only do we have a plethora of forage, you know, that we have a whole bunch of different kind of forage in our lake. If a couple different, let's say emerald shiners are down, or let's say perch minnows are down, or let's say that perch are down or whatever, we got 10 other forage species between crayfish and bloodworms and tulipies. There's so much forage that the fishery remains healthy that way. I think the other thing is, as far as forage goes, we have tulipies. And, you know, I've heard the DNR fisheries biologists talk before and say, in the state of Minnesota, if you have either a trophy walleye fishery or a trophy pike fishery, real good chance there's going to be a good healthy population of tulipies. We know that on Lake of the Woods, when a walleye becomes about 25 inches or about 5 pounds, it really starts focusing on tulipies. And a tulipy is like a cheeseburger to a walleye. It helps it grow stronger, bigger, faster, you know, and put on weight. It's interesting, you know, those walleyes, when they become 25 inches, they start targeting tulipies. So naturally, a lot of our big walleyes are caught out in the big basin of Big Traverse Bay. Big Traverse Bay is at the big open part of our lake that's about 30 miles north-south by 25 miles east-west. And the deepest spot in Big Traverse is only 38 feet deep. So the whole basin's prolific with life. And, you know, these life scopers will get out there and they'll just, you know, they'll put on miles looking for big walleyes. And, you know, these big walleyes, as they say, they're not always in a school of fish. A lot of times these big walleyes are loners. They're by themselves. So they'll get out to an area and they'll find those big walleyes and they can bat off of them and, you know, cast different lures to them. They can follow them around for a while and make multiple casts until those fish eat. And they're good at it. They got big screens. They know how to identify walleyes from other species. They're getting really good at identifying how big a fish is. And, I mean, they're professionals. And, you know, these anglers are coming in. And, again, they're bringing in five fish. It was funny. I mean, one of the tournaments, if you would have brought in five fish for more than 50 pounds, which is a 10-pound average, right? If you would have brought in that huge bag of fish, you probably would have been in sixth place for the tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah. That's, you know, I follow the tournament scene about as much as anybody, like all the different tournament trails and stuff and the bodies of water. And you can kind of see the ebbs and flows and, you know, you're always kind of factor in the time of year and, you know, on certain bodies of water, how good it's going to do for the tournament guys or whatever. But that Lake of the Woods deal has been so fascinating to see. And so many anglers, like so many of these like top tournament anglers, like I could name drop all of them, but anybody that follows kind of knows. But it's like, you know, guys that are going to Lake of the Woods, those tournament guys, like more recent years, like with the Forward Sonar deal and everything, it's so many, like so many of them, it's like their favorite body of water now.
It is.
Like, yeah, it's like for the top end guys that love finding and catching big fish, it is, you know, it's, yeah, a lot of these guys don't mind saying it. You just go across social media in the summertime and it's, and those fish don't seem to be nearly as finicky for the time of year. Like other bodies of water are kind of, you know, season dependent or this or that, or whether or not these tournament guys are going to be able to find them or get on them or get them to bite. But Lake of the Woods, man, it's, these guys are, yeah, it's a huge deal for those tournament guys. And like you said, with the catch photo release now, those walleyes are still swimming for a lot of those guys. And it's that in itself is just kind of a cool story.
It is a cool story. I'm good friends with, I've gotten to know the owner is, the Amundsens of Fish Donkey, who own Fish Donkey. And that app has really done some neat things for fishing, even ice fishing now. There's different tournaments going on, and they can have tournaments across a whole region, you know, and just the way they can do things with that technology now. But it is nice. It feels good. I'm a tournament angler myself, and, you know, I've been around long enough that, you know, I remember when, you know, we would put fish in our live well, and we try to keep them alive. And if you cut them from deeper water, they'd flip upside down. And, you know, there's, you know, if they flipped upside down, they're going to die. And then you lose weight because they penalize you if your fish isn't alive when you bring it in. And, you know, we'd put those different ice fishing depth finders, those lead weights with an alligator clip on them. We would stick those to the pectoral fins of a walleye. And that would keep that walleye stabilized and sitting in the right position so it'd live in the live well. You know, at the end of the day, we brought our bag of fish up, there'd be, you know, 10 different weights on the bottom of that live well because each one would have two, you know, but we'd have little tricks like that. And, you know, now with the catch, record, release, it's so cool because, man, you put that fish on a stick, a bump board, you know, and, you know, usually the tournament organizers will hand out a bump board so you can't cheat, and it's got specialized logos on it or number. They give you that bump board and, you know, you put that walleye down and you put the head to the left and the belly's got to be facing belly to belly. Its belly's got to be facing your belly. And you put that fish down and you got to make sure that the mouth is closed and the tail pinched and you have your hand inside the head and another hand inside the tail. And, you know, you have your partner take a picture on the bump board and, you know, the second picture, you lift it up for a hero shot. And then in some tournaments, they even have you hit the video button and you video letting that fish go and that fish swimming away once you verified your pictures are working. And yeah, hit a submit button. You put in there what species it is, you put the length, and you hit submit and it says, got one. And you know that fish got registered. And it just feels so good to watch that fish swim away and you're not hurting the population of walleyes. You know, so anyway, you know, tournament fishing is in the Forward Facing Sonar has shown us really how big a walleyes we have on Lake of the Woods. We knew it, but man, to come in bigs like that is incredible. We talked about, you know, the different reasons why the fish are so big on Lake of the Woods. You know, another reason the fish get so big on Lake of the Woods walleyes is because we have a slot limit. The slot limit is 19 and a half to 28 inches. You have to release those walleyes. So our limit is you can keep a combined limit of walleyes and saugers of six fish. up to four of the six can be walleyes. 19 and a half, you got to 28, you got to throw them back. You can keep one trophy over 28 if you still desire, if you don't want to get a graphite. Well, a graphite mount, I mean. But, you know, when you let those fish go that are 24, 25, 26-inch fish, you know, those fish have a much better chance of making it to 30, 31, 32 inches. I can promise you this, that, you know, if some people, if they had their choice, those 25s and 26s would end up in a cooler. And it feels so good just to sustain not only the population of walleyes with putting our big females back, getting a nice picture, having the memory and putting them back. Plus, there's so many big fish in the lake now. You know, thankfully, the forage can handle it. And that's a good thing. But, you know, there's so many big fish in the lake. You know, when people go out on a charter boat or if they go out ice fishing in the Lake of the Woods, the chances of them catching, you know, a slot fish, a 23, 24, 25-inch walleye, that's a nice walleye, number one. Number two, for some, that's going to be the biggest fish they ever caught, you know. And
absolutely.
You know, to get a couple pictures of that and put that fish back down the hole, what a cool thing. So there's a number of reasons why we have a trophy fishery, but one of the things this summer, 2025, showed us is that, holy man, do we have a lot of monster walleyes in Lake of the Woods. I just spoke to a guide, a very, very experienced guide, that Jason Groves is in, and you know, some of the people that follow Lake of the Woods will know Jason's name because you follow him on social media. But he said he was fishing with a buddy out on the Rainy River this fall, and he said his buddy hooked into a fish that he says, honest to goodness, we haven't had this for a while, but I think this fish could be a state record. It got off just before they could get an end under, but it was so big. He said we got a 25-incher I think just after that, and literally this 25-incher could have fit inside of this fish. He said it was huge. And, you know, I think the current state records are around 17, 18 pounds, somewhere in that range. So it's just kind of neat to have that element of the huge walleyes on Lake of the Woods. And certainly we're very thankful to have a healthy fishery right now. We're thankful that we have the cousin called the sauger, which really fills some nice voids. And it's great table fare, just like the walleyes are. And I would say the other thing that's kind of a nuance right now is going into the ice fishing year here is we got a huge population of jumbo perch. I mean, we just, you normally when you're walleye fishing on Lake of the Woods, you might catch one or two jumbos along with your walleyes because they're hanging out with them. But right now, you know, you might get four, five, six jumbos in the mix. And this last winter ice fishing, I mean, you'd set the hook on a fish, you think it's a nice walleye, and you bring it up, and man, all the sea filling that hole is green and orange from the orange fins and the green sides of a perch, and that stained water of Lake of the Woods. You know, the fish bite real good during the day because the water's stained. That gin clear water, of course, makes it a little bit tougher to fish during the day. You almost got to fish at night, but we're thankful we have that stained water. When you pull one of those perch up because of that stained water, I think, man, those colors just pop. And these perch are huge, man. They're the big humpbacks. Like their head starts out, and then they got a big bump where their body starts, almost like a big humpback, and then their bodies are just massive. They're just freaking huge fish, and God, it's fun to catch those, and they're just awesome. And but anyway, yeah, we're ice fishing. You know, we're doing this recording on the 19th of December, and as of the 19th of December, as we speak, I don't think ice fishing could have started out any better. We've got a great start to ice. Our ice is solid. It's clear, which is a strong ice. That's all good. You know, certainly every year on big water, you're going to have cracks and ice upheavals and things like that. But thankfully, that's why we have resorts and outfitters who, you know, drive that road every day and mark it and bridge it and do all the things they need to do to keep people safe. But we've had a heck of a good start to the ice fishing year. I mean, we're whacking walleyes and saugers like they're going out of style. And as we speak, they're starting to increase weight limits on the roads. And things are coming along very, very nicely.
You know, one thing, I want to get a little bit of a breakdown of the lake. And this is something that we probably include every time we talk. I think it's important, so I always want to revisit it. But kind of getting a lay of the land, you know, kind of a map out of the lake in relation to the fishing opportunities that are up there, right? Just kind of describing the sort of the geography. But one thing you were kind of mentioning, even like before we were recording, that I kind of want you to go into a little bit, because I didn't really get the full story from you, but was like, you know, kind of the breakdown of where, you know, like the, you know, where the majority of the ice fishing sort of happens, you know, talking about, you know, Traverse Bay and the South Shore and the river and the Northwest angle. I kind of want to get that breakdown from you, but I found it kind of interesting. You were making mention of it. We didn't kind of go into it hard before we were recording, but making mention of kind of like where most of the opportunity is and where most of the ice fishing is happening.
Yeah, you know, it's really a good question because, you know, Lake of the Woods is big. And, you know, I think for the average person, you know, when you hear Lake of the Woods, I mean, heck, when I'm at sports shows and things, Taylor, you know, and just out of fairness, I mean, we have a big world, right? But, oh, Lake of the Woods, man, that's awesome. That's up by Lake Superior, isn't it? Well, it is. It's three and a half hours away, you know. But, you know, isn't that up by the Boundary Waters? Yeah, well, it's 2.5 hours from Boundary Waters, you know. But, I mean, we it's interesting. And I think that first off, to know that Lake of the Woods is located right up in that little tip of Minnesota that sticks up into Canada. So right in the middle of the state, there's that little tip that sticks up to Canada. It looks like a chimney. And that's Lake of the Woods. It's actually the northernmost point of the contiguous United States. Now, I like to say there's three parts to Lake of the Woods. The first part is the Rainy River. You know, the Rainy River is... it feeds Lake of the Woods. So the Rainy River comes out of Rainy Lake. It flows, it's our international dividing line with Canada. It flows straight west all the way to Bidette, Minnesota, 60 miles from Rainy Lake to Bidette, Minnesota. And then when it hits Bidette, it turns straight north and goes another 12 miles and feeds Lake of the Woods. So the Rainy River in its own right is an incredible fishery. And that's a fishery you hear about, the spring run of walleyes, the fall run of walleyes. That's where all the lake sturgeon are and the huge lake sturgeon population. You know, there's approximately 42 miles of navigable Rainy River from the mouth of the Rainy River that goes into Lake of the Woods at Four Mile Bay, Wheeler's Point area. It goes 30 miles to Bidette and then it goes 12 miles to Bidette. From Wheeler's Point, the mouth of the river, to Bidette, 12 miles. And then when it goes back towards, Rainy Lake, is another 30 miles of navigable river all the way to Birchdale, Minnesota. So there's 42 miles of navigable river. That's one part of the lake, or sorry, one part of the fishery. And, you know, the Rainy River, do they ice fish the Rainy River? They do. The one preface is it's a river, so you got to be darn careful because there's current. And I always encourage people to go out with a guide or an outfitter, you know, whether you're on the lake or on the river, but certainly the river. As we speak, we've had, the Royal Dutchman Resort, and I think certainly Ship's Wheel does some fishing out there. I think Sean's Birchview Resort does some fishing on the river. But, you know, they've been out there, and they've been catching, nice walleyes. They've been catching big sturgeon, lake sturgeon through the ice. So it's really kind of a neat opportunity. The second part of Lake of the Woods is called Big Traverse Bay. And that's that great big open water that we talked about earlier, the big basin, 30 miles north-south by 25 miles east-west. You know, that's the majority of the ice fishing happens on Big Traverse Bay. The resorts from the Rainy River as well as the South Shore of Lake of the Woods will fish that big open basin. And some of the resorts that are on the river, they end up going out on ice access roads that go over Four Mile Bay, and they go over the little strip of land called Pine Island, and they access that big lake. And, you know, some of them will have, you know, bombardiers trap rigs that they take people out to the fish houses with. Others will plow roads so that you can come and go as you please. They'll say, all right, Taylor, you're in house number 22. So what you're going to do is here's where you access the ice road. You'll be going out, 4.2 miles and you make a left. There's a red sign that says walleye lane. When you hit 4.2 miles, you make a left turn and the houses are real spread out. You'll be the second house on the right. It's house number 22. When you can park right in front of the door and load your stuff in the fish house. When you open the door and the holes are all drilled out and cleaned, we have bait inside that with minnows in there for you already. The thermostat's set at 70. The house is banked. We just set it. In fact, we're going to get some nice fish in that area. That's why we just moved it there yesterday. And you know what? Step in and start fishing. You know, and we have some ice guys that will check on you throughout the day. If you need anything, there'll be a sheet inside there that has our resort phone number on it. And just let us know if we can help in any way. Otherwise, go out and have fun. I mean, you know, it's what a great deal. And I think that it should be said too, that I really like the fact that, you know, a lot of our resorts are full service resorts, meaning they make ice fishing possible for everybody. Whether you are an experienced pro, and it's just nice to step into comfort like that and be in a hard-sided house for weather conditions, for ease, whatever. Or if you're brand new to ice fishing and you said, man, we should get our family out ice fishing this year. We should get a brother's trip, a guy's trip, a girl's trip, bachelor party, bachelorette party, whatever. You know, let's go buzz up to Lake of the Woods. And, you know, even if you don't fish, they'll provide all the equipment for you, the know-how, the fish houses, the whole ball of wax. Also kind of cool too, that we have sleeper fish houses. So, you know, for people that want to spend some time and sleep overnight on the ice, man, what a great opportunity. You know, you head out to a sleeper and, you bring your sleeping bags, you bring your food, your drinks, your fish and stuff. And, you know, you set up camp for a few nights and, you're going to be, it could be nice and cold outside, but you're going to be real cozy inside of big furnaces, insulated houses. Every sleeper is a little bit different. Some are real fancy, real, real fancy. And some are just very modest, you know, two bunk beds and whatever. They're all going to have some kind of a way to use the restroom. And, you know, just – and then it's kind of fun when you're out there because, you know, boy, I don't know about other folks. I've heard this – boy, you sleep good when you're out there, you know, you're out in that fresh air. And of course you can hear the wind whipping outside, but you're nice and warm inside. And you wake up in the morning and throw a sweatshirt on, throw a hat on, get the coffee going and start jigging. I mean, it doesn't get any better. I think the other thing cool about a sleeper is, you know, going out at night and, there's no light pollution. And you're so far north that you look up at the sky and it's like, I know you've experienced this. You look at the sky, it's like, holy man. Those stars look like you could practically grab them. They're twinkling. You see satellites going across the sky. You see Milky Ways. I mean, just, it's a different world. It's so freaking cool. Every once in a while, you get lucky and see the northern lights. And it's fun. It's fun. They call it the glamping, you know, you're ice camping kind of, but you're out in a nice hard-sided house and you have cooking facilities. So, you know, naturally a lot of people will have a fish fry out on the ice. And, you know, one of the questions I get is, as we're on the second part of Lake Woods, I'll get to the third part, which is the northwest angle in just a second. But, you know, people ask, hey, what are the rules for preparing a meal of fish out on the ice? And you absolutely can cook fish out on the ice. The kicker is you got to know the rules. So the way the Minnesota DNR says it is that, yep, you can cook fish on the ice, but make sure that your oil is hot. You're ready to put your fillets in before you start cleaning fish. Clean your fish just before you're going to cook them. And then keep your remains of the fish intact so that if we have to come out and count them and or measure them, that we can. And then what happens is once the clock strikes midnight, as long as the resort that you're renting the fish house or the outfitter you're renting the fish house from comes out and does a garbage takeaway, and as long as they take away your carcasses and things, then you can start over, you know, fresh again at I guess 12:01 a.m. I guess it would be, but with a new limit. But you can't get a new limit until those carcasses are taken back to shore and you know, discarded, whatever. So that's kind of how it works. And people enjoy having a fresh fish fry out there. For some of the sleeper fish houses that have ovens in addition to the cooktops, you know, people will bring out pans of lasagna. They'll bring out pizzas, frozen pizzas. They bring out fresh rolls, caramel rolls and cinnamon rolls that they can make in the morning to make that fish house smell real good. And it's just kind of fun. Everybody has their nuances to the sleeper fish houses. Certainly we have a lot of ice roads that make it possible for people that own their own wheelhouses now to come up to Lake of the Woods and pay a road access fee and to be able to go out. You know, the outfitters and resorts are real good about, you know, having special roads for wheelhouses. They spread you out. And when you're going on a road, they have different wings that are plowed off, so you can back in and have your own little area. And they make sure they move those roads off, and so they keep you on top of the fish, just like they do their regular resort houses. So nice opportunities that way.
You know, and my little interject, because you're on the topic, and I just really enjoy this, the element of Lake of the Woods, and it's what you just described. It's kind of important that, you know, there's just a lot of people that because it's in a you know, pretty remote place, right? Like you're going way north and you're on the Canadian border, but you're not going without anything. So it's like, you know, everything about it can be kind of exciting and kind of give you the pre-planning jitters of like, you're going on this massive trip with family or friends. But yet, you know, it's so plug and play because once you're there, you don't have to go without anything. If that's like a kind of a, if that's kind of too adventurous for some people to think about, you know, going somewhere remote or going somewhere where you can see the northern lights and it's, or somewhere where you're X amount of miles away from a gas station or a Walmart, you know, and all those little things, we kind of celebrate those. Like you and I are kind of guys that love like the adventurous or to talk about it in an adventurous way, but not to make it intimidating to people, because really once you're up there, it's unbelievable just the efficiency that these resorts, you know, are operating up there. Just, it's incredible. And the facilities, everything has just gotten so nice.
Well, you talk about, yeah, you're right. And you know, you're not roughing it, because when you go up to these resorts, I mean, these resorts are nice. They're very, very nice resorts. And, you know, a lot of them have, you know, real good food, different kind of menus and nice taverns and that's part of the fun. I mean, the socialization. In fact, it's kind of a unique culture because, you know, when you go out fishing on Lake of the Woods, I mentioned earlier that we have stained water, and that is such an advantage, Taylor. I mean, to have those walleyes and saugers biting all day long, I just heard, you know, a video from Matt Johnson, who is a well-known guide. He used to work with Clam, and now he's on his own, but he's a really well-known guide in the Twin Cities area, and he fishes Lake of the Woods once in a while, and he's kind of commented how, you know, it's funny because I bring my boys up there, he said, and we like, you know, going in a sleeper fish house. But he said, a lot of times we'll catch our biggest walleye right around noon, right in the middle of the day. And that's because, you know, and in some days it's actually better when it's sunny, because that sun will penetrate that stained water and those fish can, you know, see things better and stuff. But anyway, nonetheless, it's unique that way. And, you know, so because it's stained water, because the main bite for walleyes and saugers is during the day, that makes it so there's not a huge advantage for being out over, you know, out fishing when it's dark out, like some lakes. Clearwater lakes, you want to be out there at the golden hour, and you want to be out there after dark. But on Lake of the Woods, it's not so much. Yeah, you'll get some fish after dark if you're out there anyway, and that sort of thing. Maybe some eel pout and a few walleyes and stuff. But as a rule, those fish bite better during the day. Well, what that does then is it creates a culture where the majority of people come off the ice at about 4:30 or 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Well, now all of a sudden, holy man, if you want to slide into one of the you know, one of the ice bars on the lake, or you want to slide into one of our resort taverns, holy man, is it crowded with ice anglers. And people are telling fish stories. And you got people from all over the United States. And it's just festive. It's fun. And you know, going to the different resorts, every resort bar has a different culture. You know, some are more log cabin-y. Some are real, I mean, everyone's a little bit different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's just fun that
culture, 100%. I think that's such a, and it's contagious, man. It's like, I've said this probably in every Lake of the Woods conversation I've ever had is, you know, a little bit of access that I've had personally. And then like, professionally, just going up there to work or film or whatever we've ever been doing, it's, man, it really kind of gets in your bones a little bit. It's kind of festive, and it you like on any given Saturday where there's a lot of fishing going on, it kind of feels like you're there for like a festival weekend. You kind of feel like, man, I didn't realize that there was going to be some big gathering. Where is it? What's going on? Yes. But it's like, that's the way it is all the time. And yeah, that whole thing, it's really contagious. And it's not you know, people aren't you know, putting the brim of their hat down and not talking. It's not quiet. It's not secrets. It's not, you know, everybody can, no, it's the opposite. It's very social, and everybody's, you know, giving information, like, oh, you know, showing pictures of big fish and what you caught them on and what time of day it was. It's like all the information that, you know, you would never expect to pry out of a stranger is just that, those are conversations are just, you know, they're popping off. And that is definitely worth mentioning, I feel like, because a lot of conversations I have on the podcast or different places that we talk about going fishing, it's really not a part of the conversation. It's really not that's not how it happens in a lot of places, mm-hmm. especially on people's mm-hmm. home bodies of water. And so when you go there and you experience that for the first time, I'm just speaking from my own firsthand experience, going to big major destinations, with Lake of the Woods being really like kind of at the top of the mountain in that way. It's the camaraderie that you're having with your own buddies is on another level. But when you go into the tavern or you go in and you have good food available to you and it's early in the evening, you don't go without sleep or anything. It's like, you know, the next thing you know, your whole table is joined up in conversation with the table next to you. And it's like, these are parts of fishing conversations that are worth, it's like, I feel like it's super worth us mentioning or just kind of like shedding a little bit of extra light on here right now in this moment, because that's, you just don't get that everywhere.
No, you don't. And it is, it's so unique. It's such a unique area that way. And everybody's going to be catching fish. It's just a matter of how many did you catch, how big were they? And, it's one of the problems is that the expectations for some people that have been to Lake of the Woods and hit it really good. You know, it's like, I was talking to somebody recently, a guide recently on some different things we're doing. And he said, yeah, things actually slowed down. I don't know if it's that warm weather that came in or what, but we had kind of a slow day yesterday. So I checked our guests at, 10 o'clock in the morning, and I think they had 10 keepers. 10 o'clock in the morning, they had 10 keepers. And that was a slow day compared to what it was. I mean, it's like all relative, you know, and as the old saying goes, a bad day on Lake of the Woods is better than any day you'll have anywhere else. And we get pretty spoiled, but it's usually pretty darn good fishing. And, I think the other thing to be thankful for is just the fact that these guys and gals that are working the ice, I mean, they're getting up at dark 30 and it's 25 below. This morning it was 23 below up at the northwest angle, but they're getting up at dark 30. They're starting the rigs. They're driving the ice roads and the ice trails, making sure that, you know, nothing changed overnight. They're making sure that people are safe. You know, some will fire up the fish houses if people are coming out in the fish houses in the morning, and other resorts, if they know they're going to have guests in their fish houses the next day, they actually leave the propane furnaces on all night. It's cheaper to, burn some propane and keep it warm in there in the holes untied versus having somebody go out and punch holes and scoop them out and drill them out and, you know, all the labor it takes and that sort of thing. But anyway, you got people that are working their tails off. You know, yesterday I saw a video, it was real windy yesterday, and I saw a video, it almost looked like whiteout conditions. And, you know, these guys are out in the lake making sure people are safe. I think some resorts didn't even go out yesterday, but that's rare. It happens a couple times a year, and yesterday was one of those days. But guess what? Safety first. They're watching your back. So then what do people do? Oftentimes they'll talk about those trips more than ever. Hey, remember that time that we couldn't go on the lake on a day two of our trip? Remember how we went to a couple different taverns and a couple of different bars? Remember how we shot into Bidette and went to the History Museum? Remember we went to World and, you know, we checked out the shed with all the classic cars? And I mean, you find different things to do. One year, it was real windy out, and I was with my brother and my sister. And I said, you know what? Let's drive up to, we're up at the angle. I said, let's drive around the lake and go over to Kenora by car. So we drove around that lake, and it was really interesting. And then we went over to Kenora and we had lunch and did a little shopping, and what a fun day. Now that day, it wasn't the day we planned. We planned on fishing that day, but guess what? We still got a couple good days of fishing, and we still talk about that trip. So there's a lot to do, a lot of uniquenesses to the whole area. And, It's something like you'll never see before. Even having a couple of bars out on the ice, having a couple of iconic statues that people know of, the Willie Walleye statue, over 40 foot long walleye in the town of Bidette, Minnesota, having the northernmost point buoy up at Angle Inlet, Minnesota, the angle, signifying the northernmost point of the contiguous U.S., just like Key West has one in their location signifying the southernmost point of the contiguous U.S. So, I mean, there's, it's just a cool area that way. What are the different towns in our area? We have Bidette, we have Warroad, we have Roseau, we have Angle Inlet up at the angle. When you're driving up to the northwest angle, there's a little town of Sprague, Manitoba. And I mean, just, it's just a fun area.
We should give the northwest angle a little bit of love. And this one's kind of for me, because this is one of my favorite portions of the conversation, but there's a lot less, it's kind of the adventurous area up there. And there's probably, just like by the numbers, probably fair to say that there's a lot less fishing going on, or a lot less fishing pressure going on up in the northwest angle. But I think it's important. I think this is one of those this is another one of those things that people ought to be sort of putting it on their bucket list.
Well, sure. And it's also the third area. We're talking about the three areas of Lake of the Woods, the third area that we're getting to, right? So it's logical. We do talk about the angle. And you know what? It's the northwest angle. So it's that little tip of Minnesota that sticks up into Canada. And it's really unique because, you know, first off, we talked about it's the northernmost point of the contiguous U.S. Why does Minnesota go across in a nice straight line on the Canadian border? And all of a sudden there's that chimney that sticks up.
Yeah.
That was, you know, kind of odd, isn't it? That was a mapping error. So back in the day when they were figuring out maps and signing treaties, they thought that this, okay, we're going to make sure the United States gets the start of the Mississippi River. And they believed at that time that the Angle Inlet, which is up in the northwest angle, is where the very northwest corner where it narrows down. They thought that was the start of the Mississippi River. So, you know, that was part of Minnesota and everything went on. And, you know, over a year after the ink was dry in the agreement, they realized that we made a mistake because Lake Itasca further south, a couple hours south, is the start of the Mississippi. And this wasn't, but it was too late. So we got the northwest angle, and oh man, are we fortunate to have gotten that piece of the world. I mean, it is incredible. The northwest angle is the northernmost point. It's where the 14,552 islands of Lake of the Woods begin. And there's just so much history up there. It's interesting too, because the angle is called an exclave, meaning it's a remote piece of your own territory that you have to drive through another territory in order to reach. So when you drive to the northwest angle, you actually have to drive through 40 miles of Canada, and then you re-enter up at the northwest angle. Now, that's very unique in itself. So in order to travel up there, you have to have proper credentials to get into Canada. That means that you got to have either a passport card, an enhanced driver's license, or you can use an original birth certificate combined with a government-issued ID, which would be like a driver's license. And that'll get you through Canada Customs, you know, and you drive your way up. And I always tell people, Taylor, that, you know, on the way up, you go through this little town called Sprague, Manitoba. And on the right-hand side, there's this little grocery store called Carl and Kay's Fine Foods. It almost looks like it's in like a metal building, a pole barn almost. But it's a little grocery store. And tell you what, you want to stop there and pick up some things that you can get only in Canada, you can't get in the U.S. Things like coffee crisp candy bars, English toffee candy bar, Aero bars. They have things like Canadian rye bread. It's actually a cracked wheat bread. They make them at some of the famous Winnipeg bakeries in the area. Your different kind of berries and different kind of brands of Canadian jams. They got you know, they're old Dutch potato chips and different things. They're different flavors than U.S. Things like everything chips, ketchup chips, red pepper sour cream, roasted chicken. I mean, just different, just fun things to pick up. When in Rome, do as the Romans, you know? And a lot of times you pick that up on the way, on the, heading up to the angle for your fishing trip. And a lot of people will stop there on the way home too to bring some home to loved ones, but just because it's unique. But then you make your way up to the angle, and it's interesting because you go through a formal check-in station down on the main border in the south there. And then you drive 40 miles up, and then when you enter into the northwest angle, it's an unmanned border, meaning there's no check-in station there. So what happens is you drive into the angle, and when you get to either Jim's Corner, which is right at the T in the road, everybody has to go by Jim's Corner. You can either go to Jim's Corner, and there is a booth there that's climate controlled with a bunch of windows. And it's like the size of a big fish house. And you can check in there on an iPad with U.S. Customs because you entered into the U.S. Or just go to your favorite resort. And all the Northwest Angle resorts now have iPads that you can, you know, go into the resort or perhaps order your favorite beverage and take 5 minutes and check in. Put in your credentials, you hit submit, you wait a minute, and all of a sudden it says approved, you know, and it's real simple. But once you get up there, you know, up at the angle, it's not as big fishing because number one, we don't have as many resorts up there ice fishing. You know, we have, I think, 15 resorts in the angle and about half of them ice fish. Angle's kind of unique. You know, there's the only ice roads up at the northwest angle are ice roads used to go from Young's Bay Resort, where Jerry's Bar and Restaurant is, out to the to the resorts that are on the islands. The ice roads up there are not used for ice fishing. When you ice fish up a dingle, either people, if they're fishing on their own, are using their own rigs, such as snowmobiles or side-by-sides with tracks oftentimes. Otherwise, all the resorts will take people out to their heated fish houses via bombardiers up there. And it's just unique. Some of the resorts up there are just real nice cabins that you bring your own food and make your own meals. And other resorts have all the amenities of a full service resort with a bar and restaurant. Take your choice. And half the resorts are on the mainland called Angle Inlet, Minnesota. You drive right to your cabin. The other ice fishing resorts are out on islands. We have an Airbnb on Brush Island, but we have our resorts on one on Flag Island, and we got a number of them on Oak Island. And you take that ice road, it's well marked, it's signed, it's like a 4-lane highway, plowed real good. You drive up to your resort and you drive right up to your cabin. You drive, check in, and they say, hey, your cabin's cabin number four, and you're over there on the right-hand side. Feel free to pull up right to the door and you can unload your stuff inside. And, here's the hours of our bar and restaurant. And tomorrow you'll be, I understand you're fishing for 2 days. Great. Tomorrow the bombardier will leave at 7:30 in the morning. Our resort opens for breakfast at 6:30 if you're interested in breakfast. And it's great. Some people choose to get any of our resorts, whether south or north. At the angle, some people might choose to get the American plan. The American plan is your lodging, all your ice fishing, and all your meals all included in one package price. You discount a little bit, and kind of nice option. But yeah, so that's how it works at the angle. It's just a different world up there. It's just with the islands and different things. And, it's also interesting too, because when you're up at the angle, most people are going to be doing their fishing out of a resort fish house on the American side. You'll be fishing structure. You'll be catching walleyes and sauger and jumbo perch, some pike, some eel pout. And then, usually the mix of walleyes up at the angle is a little bit stronger than the south end. You'll get more saugers on the south end, with obviously a lot of walleyes, but you'll get a higher percentage of saugers on the south end because of the big basin, the mud, it's deeper and stuff. You get up to the angle, it's more rock, more structure, so you're going to have a little bit more, a higher percentage of walleyes up there. Some other unique opportunities up at the angle, some of our resorts work with some Canadian outfitters that are very close that target big black crappies through the ice. So what you can do is you can hook up with one of our Northwest Angle resorts, and they'll set you up in a hard-sided house in Canada. And you'll get out there and you'll be digging for these great big slab crappies, and they are fun. It's very good crappie fishing. Just like on the U.S. side, when our resorts move houses around to stand fish, these Canadian outfitters that they're working with, a lot of these Canadian outfitters are set up specifically for the U.S. resort traffic. That's where their business is coming from. But they make sure they do a good job because they want you coming back. And they move those houses around, and, those crappies, some people will use traditional crappie gear. Other people will use small walleye gear because those fish are so big, small jig and spoons with minnow heads and that sort of thing. And it's kind of what a lot of people will do is maybe they come up and ice fish for 3 days, and they'll fish walleyes and saugers and such for 2 days. And one day they'll do that special crappie trip. It's kind of fun to mix that in. And the other thing you can do up there is some of our independent guides will take you into Ontario and the lake trout fish or walleye fish, amongst the islands in Ontario. But some of them will take you to lake trout fish, and they get you over to Whitefish Bay. And just the fact that you're on a snow machine, snowmobiling a pretty good distance across all those islands and parts of Lake of the Woods, it's really pretty, really an adventure just doing that. And then you get over there and you ice fish amongst Whitefish Bay, where a lot of the lake trout are. And the water is deeper over there. It's clear water over there too. And then of course you snowmobile back. It's just a fun adventure. We actually have a couple places that rent sleds, snowmobiles up at Lake of the Woods. We have one on the south end, and I think it's called Escape Rentals. And we have another one that just started up at the Northwest Angle. I know the Northwest Angle resorts will know who that is. So if you're interested in renting sleds up at the angle, you can do that. And I should mention too, since I mentioned snowmobiling, and we have really good snowmobiling up at the angle and on the south end of Lake of the Woods. We got two very, very active snowmobile clubs. And They do a good job. I mean, they groom the trails. There's a trail, Taylor, that goes from the south end of Lake of the Woods all the way up to the northwest angle across the lake. It's a state grant made trail. So it's a major trail, and it's staked very nicely. It's groomed off, and it's over a 40 mile trail. And it's actually a transportation hub for a lot of people that maybe you don't want to cross through Canada. It's just easier to jump on a sled and pull your collapsible behind you. Even if you're just going to stay at a resort up there, even if you're fishing out of their houses, you put your gear in an otter tub, or you put it in your collapsible fish house, put the cover on it, strap it down real good, and away you go. And the snowmobile is real good up there for transportation. A lot of people have learned that, you know, the trails up there are well-groomed, even through the woods, both on the south and north ends of the lake. The trails are very well-groomed, very well-maintained, and you do not have the traffic that you do in some of these cosmopolitan snowmobile areas. Consequently, it's some of the best snowmobiling you'll have. And not only that, when if you want to jump from resort to resort, there's lots of options, which a lot of snowmobiles like doing. And then when you stay overnight at night, my goodness, you got lots of choices up there. Some snowmobiles will even say, hey, let's do our snowmobile trip. Let's go ice fishing for a day. Let's just rent the house for one day, you know? And so it's kind of fun that way. But again, it's unique, right? It's so many options. I talk about the walleyes a lot because that's what we're known for. And that's really what most people are after. But if we didn't have the fishery we did, I'd be talking a lot more about snowmobiling, because our snowmobiling is just incredible. And again, I'm sure some people don't want me to say anything about it, because it's we took one of the guys, one of our buddies from Brainerd was up there shooting a TV show with us, and we snowmobiled as part of the show just to show it. And when we went through the trails up at the angle, he goes, not only are these some of these most beautiful trails I've ever seen, there's nobody on them. He said, you'd be down in the, central Minnesota and north central Minnesota, and it's freaking packed and the trails are beat. Up here, it's like you got them to yourself. He was all jacked up. So I just say that, for snowmobilers, my goodness, it's a neat opportunity to go up there.
As we prepare for the upcoming ice fishing season, making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to summitfishingequipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Sealcraft brings innovation and revolution to ice fishing. If you fish early or late ice anywhere, or maybe you fish big reservoirs where ice conditions are constantly changing, basically anywhere that ice can be dangerous, Sealcraft is the solution for safe transport across the ice. For pictures and videos of the brand new Sealcrafts in action, you can find them on Facebook and Instagram. Those links are in the description of this podcast. One thing that I think about that's fun to think about, like from the ice fishing on Lake of the Woods, is the opportunity is so widespread or so well distributed, you never feel like you're battling fishing pressure. You know, like that when on other bodies of water or other people try to relate to, their own experiences, when you start hearing about these super popular destinations, and me included, like sometimes, it can get to the point where I'm sitting here thinking, well, if so many people go there, like that might not be what I want to do. I don't want to go fish around a bunch of people, but it's such a vast, the opportunity is so well spread, it's not like a big body of water, but there's one reef that produces all the fish. So everybody's there and you're shoulder to shoulder and it can kind of put you out a little bit. It's like, it's just remote enough, but it's just big enough. The scale of it is just, it's so, Yeah, I think we're so far away from ever, you know, like overusing these places. Another reason why we so much like to just promote it. The other thing that I didn't want to understate was the multi-species, you know, talking about the crappies. That's another thing that I've been exposed to a little bit that was super impressive. And I don't know if this has been a factor for you and, you know, with the tourism and the fishing traffic and the chatter. But it's not to be, you don't want to understate that Lake of the Woods is definitely a multi-species destination and for quality as well. It's not just that there's crappies swimming in between the islands up there, up north. Like it's, you know, you can go back and watch episode of JMO from a couple of years ago. We were fishing Ontario waters in that particular episode, but it was right close to there. And it's like, it was very impressive. I grew up fishing crappies. I was so impressed and loved it. And the quality, you know, you're never more than a couple hundred yards away from a good walleye spot. And you're never more than, a quarter mile away from, you know, a little basin that you ought to pop down in and see if it's stacked full of crappies or if you have your limit of walleyes. You know, if anybody, I think about it like this is, if anybody is planning a destination and they kind of, you know, they like picking destinations where they can bring the meat home. You know, if you like going fishing somewhere where you can bring as much home as you can, and fair enough, there's plenty of people out there like that, right?
Sure.
It's definitely a multi-species deal. If you catch your limit of walleyes and your brain is immediately thinking like, okay, it's 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. We're having a great day here. Of course, if it were me and you, we would just keep hammering the walleyes and let them go. But it's like, but for those that are really looking for that, the opportunity to do a little harvest or fill their freezer a little bit, maybe this is like their one big trip where they can go and they try to get as many meals out of it as they can. That multi-species element is a big factor for that, I feel like. It's just worth
it is.
Bringing up.
Yeah, it is. It is. And you know what? Hey, I think the thing that is that everybody wants to be good stewards of our lake. But you know, if you fish within the limits, I mean, the DNR sets rules within limits so that the lake can handle what the rules are, you know, what the limits are. And, Lake of the Woods, I mean, it's, we talked about, you can get up to a combined limit of up to six fish, four walleyes and two saugers. And, but then you also got your jumbo perch, your pike, your crappies, you know, another species that gets a lot of attention in today's world. Eel pout or burbot.
Yeah.
I mean, they are a cool fish. And I don't know if you knew this, but Lake of the Woods actually, we have the state record burbot and we've broken our own state record numerous times. And I think the state record burbot right now is about 19 and a half pounds, if I'm not mistaken.
I did not.
And big old burbot. But we catch a lot of eel pout in our lake. In fact, it was really funny. I was talking to some younger guy at one of the sports shows and he says, yeah, man, I finally made it up to Lake of the Woods. In fact, four of us buddies went up and stayed in a sleeper. That's cool. How was it? He goes, oh, it's cool, Zach. And he's like, yeah, man, I caught my first eel pout. I go, really? How'd that go? He goes, I'll tell you what, it was weird. I mean, I caught this fish, and it's kind of weird looking, you know, and it's slithering all over kind of, and I grabbed it, and, you know, they all say it wraps around your arm. Well, you know, it doesn't really wrap around your arm, but what it does is it's really hard to hold an eel pout and to have that fish stay straight for a picture because its tail's always curling up and it's just weird looking, you know? And he says, I got that thing off the hook and we didn't keep it in this case. We just let it go. And I let that fish go. And man, he says, I went to bed that night and I was up on that top bunk and I was thinking about that eel pout and I couldn't go to sleep. So I got down and put covers on all the holes and went back to bed.
Yeah.
Oh, you put covers on the holes. What do you think eel pout are going to come?
Going to come back up and get you? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was really kind of funny.
They're like an alien creature. Yeah, the first one you ever come in contact with, it's like an alien spawn or something. Yeah, totally. It's a thing. Yeah, no, and like you say, that eel pout's not a trash fish anymore, right? It's like there's
no.
Shoot. It's a I get all kinds of write-ins for podcasts and stuff to talk about it. Like Northern Minnesota, there's some great eel pout fishing going on and people are celebrating that too. Absolutely. And to know that, you know, you're on a giant body of water where, you know, trophy class fish of any species is always an opportunity. It's I think that, you know, like you say, if there's somebody that's maybe just a little bit less in the know and they, you know, they just think that Lake of the Woods is good for, you know, going and, you know, sitting in one of these tent cities and, you know, and catching small walleyes and then going home and whatever. It's like, it's, you know, there's way more to the conversation, and that multi-species element is definitely a thing. And I don't know if that's affected tourism or anything like that with you and your job, but from a fishing perspective, once you're up there, if you are there just for the walleyes, and you've been doing that for 2-3 days, it is kind of fun to see something else come up through the hole.
Oh, you'll have different stuff come up through the hole. You know, so I'll say a couple things. First off, the old saying of Lake of the Woods. When you set the hook on Lake of the Woods, you truly never know what you're going to catch. I mean, we've had, it could be a monster walleye. It could be a big eel pout. It could be a 44-inch pike. It could be a sturgeon, a lake sturgeon. It could be, you know, last year, every year on the basin, on the south end, we'll get a few lake trout. Because those lake trout, when the water is all 33 degrees everywhere in the lake, they'll find their ways to other parts of the lake from the northeast section, you know. So we'll get some lake trout in the basin. We had a young gal a couple years ago catch a 50-something inch muskie. I mean, we get muskies every year on the basin. So when you set that hook, you really never know what you're going to catch. I'll tell you the other thing I'll mention about eel pout or burbot is, they used to be considered a junk fish. In fact, back in the day, I remember driving out on one of the ice roads. And I said to the person I was fishing with, as we were driving out, I'm like, look at that dude over there, man. He's way out all by himself. And he's no fish. He's just fish out in the open. And I looked and I looked, and here wasn't a guy. Here was a great big bald eagle eating an eel pout that somebody threw up on ice. See, that they just left it out there. Well, back in the day, what they used to do is catch eel pout, and it wasn't necessarily even legal because you're not supposed to litter. But they would throw eel pout up on the ice for the birds to eat, and they wouldn't put them back, and nobody ate them. Well, then for a while there, they had that eel pout festival on Leech Lake in Walker, Minnesota, and. You know, they've discontinued that festival now, but back when they did that, that really brought notoriety to how good eating eel pout is. They call it freshwater cod because it's in the cod family. In fact, a while back, somebody said, Joe, here's a testament to how popular and how good tasting the eel pout are. I believe it might've been red lobster. I'm not sure, but they had freshwater cod on their menu. Of course, what that was burbot. It was eel pout. When you cook eel pout, it's a real kind of a firm meat, and you can cook it two ways. You can fry it or broil it like you would a walleye or sauger, and it's delicious. At the same time, what a lot of people do with eel pout, they call it freshwater lobster, or poor man's lobster, they call it. What they'll do is they'll take the fillets, and they'll cut the fillets up and actually cube the meat. And what they'll do is they'll boil that meat in salt water or like in Mountain Dew. And then what they do is when they pull it out, they dip it in melted butter just like they would lobster. And it's almost like poor man's lobster. It has that tendency, a little bit of a taste and texture of lobster. People just love it for an appetizer. It's just kind of a neat deal. When you clean an eel pout, they got a unique bone system. And you almost, you get the back straps of them right above the rib cage. You get those thin pieces of meat all the way down their back. And then you get two pieces of tail meat. The meat is a real white, firm meat. It's real good, and especially in that cold water up at Lake of the Woods. So it's, again, it's another opportunity. You know, a lot of people, if they catch a pike, the pike limit up at Lake of the Woods is 3 pike. All pike 30 to 40 inches must be released immediately. You can keep 1 pike over 40 inches. So, we're talking pike. I mean, the pike in Lake of the Woods are delicious fish. And as long as you can get that Y-bone out, which the guides know how to do it. And by the way, when you fish up Lake of the Woods with a resort, the guides will clean your fish for you. You know, when you're done at the end of the day, hey, hand your bucket off. They'll put your name on it and your last name on it. And they'll ask you, so would you like your fish prepared to bring home with you? Or do you want to, eat some of them up at the resort tonight? And we'll keep some out for you. And then what they'll do is you give them that bucket and you go to happy hour or go back to your cabin and relax, and they'll take care of the fish cleaning, and they'll hook up with you for the fillets later. But what a nice opportunity, especially I've even spoken to people that said, Joe, one of the reasons we're tentative to go ice fishing is because we don't know how to admit it, but we don't know how to clean fish. Don't worry about it. The guys will clean the fish for you. If you want, the resorts will even cook them up. What a fun deal.
You know, one thing that I think is cool anywhere you travel, or anytime you go to these destination trip, fishing destinations, I always get drawn to, this personally, and I think a lot of people kind of are like this when you go to specific places, but anytime I visit somewhere, you're there, fishing. For me, it's mostly, over the years, it's kind of been work-related where Jason and I, we're going somewhere, but you know, you walk into like the lobby of a resort, or you're checking in somewhere, or wherever it is, you know, wherever it's present, you always get drawn to, or I always get drawn to, you know, the decorations, the decor, the photos, and especially the old photos. And like, you know, the old lures, like the old relics that are hanging on the wall. And you go to like Lake of the Woods, you see that stuff. That's stuff that was once in operation. The history on Lake of the Woods is kind of what I'm getting at. Is like, it's such a old, rich history that I think is kind of fascinating. And kind of fascinating, especially when you contrast to just how incredible, like the things we've been talking about, just how, you know, where it's gotten to today with what they offer with the extensive ice roads and the really nice fish houses and the, you know, everything that we've been talking about. And I just like, those are kind of some stories that I was just going to see if there's anything cool in your mind, you know, kind of maybe to be a little bit of a Lake of the Woods historian for this. This is kind of some stories that I thought would be kind of fun. The fish don't really care about that stuff, but as anglers, it adds a ton to the experience. I feel like when you go somewhere that has history and you get to learn a little bit about
it's cool. Yeah, I think it's really cool. Well, first off, I mean, in general, ice fishing has really exploded, you know, across the ice belt, and you know, Lake of the Woods is no different. You know, Lake of the Woods, I mean, you know, arguably, I think Lake of the Woods is probably the largest ice fishing destination in all of North America, you know, and you know, you think about why that is. Well, part of it is, you know, we have millions of walleyes and sockers. Part of it is we have a big area. Part of it is we have the resort infrastructure. Without the resort infrastructure, plowing roads, putting fish houses out, doing all the behind the scenes work, basically doing all the cold work, the hard work to make life easy for all of us that go ice fishing, you know, we wouldn't be having a conversation right now. So, you know, it's kind of fun that way. And you know what, you talk about the old days ice fishing. You know, ice fishing back in the 70s and early 80s was not that popular. And part of the reason is we didn't have all the different things that have developed from technology like we do now. Give you an example. I was talking to a resort owner and I said, you know, what was the sleeper fish house business like back in the day? And he said, we didn't really have one because back in the day, we didn't have these reliable propane furnaces that are very reliable and they got CO2 detectors on them. So if you know, things start going bad now with that, they automatically turn off and they're just super reliable. And we have cell phones now. So if something goes wrong, people can just make a phone call and we have you know, reliable vehicles that are fuel injected. So you turn the key and most of the time they start. And there's just so many things that have changed. Back in the day, you know, we didn't have all that stuff. You wouldn't dare put a fish house out 10 miles on Lake of the Woods with people in it. And it's 25 below zero. And you have an old oil burning furnace that is somewhat unreliable. And, you know, you don't have cell phones. Back in the day when they first started having sleeper fish houses, they actually had CB radios in some of them. And that CB radio would go back to the resort office. And, you know, in the middle of the night when the resort owners were sleeping, well, it's kind of tough, you know. And so I think they probably had a backup heater, you know, with a sunflower and a propane tank just in case. But, I mean, it wasn't like it is now. Now, I mean, you know, they got either a nice groomed trail where they take, you know, bombardiers or track rigs out to you and check on you a few times throughout the day. And they got porta potties out there or bathrooms attached to the fish houses. You know, they got plowed ice roads that go right out to the front door of your house so you can come and go as you please in case you ever need it to. You have a vehicle right there that's right next to you. Everybody has cell phones. I mentioned that. I mean, it's just a different world. I mean, nowadays, if you're in a sleeper fish house, some of these sleeper fish houses, of course, have generators and TVs and, I mean, it's just a different world. So technology has come a long ways. Hey, how about the power ice auger? Dave Gens, a godfather of ice fishing, he always talks about, you know, we talk about all this technology and forward-facing sonar and everything. What would happen if we didn't have power augers? And we had to drill these holes by hand. Well, that's what it used to be. Heck, I remember Taylor back in high school and, you know, I was playing football and stuff, but I remember ice fishing with my uncle. And he gets such a kick watching me drill a hole. I almost took pride in how fast I could drill a hole. I was lifting weights and everything. And, well, he loved it. You know, he didn't have to drill any holes. But, you know, we didn't move around a lot. You know, we drilled those holes for that shack, and we didn't go jumping. You know, we kind of stayed put for the most part. And, you know, nowadays with our power augers and our you know, our modern day flashers and forward facing sonar, man, it makes it fun to watch that stuff. I know the AquaView underwater cameras and things like that are make it fun on clear water lakes. But I mean, there's a lot of things that make ice fishing enjoyable. You know, the nice insulated fish houses we have now, the wheel houses that people use all year round as RVs. You know, now, you know, when a family looks at an RV, if they like ice fishing, you know, they got to take a hard look and say, should we get an RV or should we get a sleeper fish house? Because we can use that sleeper fish house year round as an RV and, you know, as a fish house. Look at what sleeper fish house or the wheel houses have done for getting families into ice fishing. Now you have kids that are going, wives that are going, you know, not to be, not to insinuate that women don't fish, but I mean, you got whole families that are fishing together now. And that's how they spend their weekend. It's almost like ice camping / ice fishing. It's really cool because it's getting people outdoor recreating and it's getting them out. You know, we talked about how things progress. You know, the other thing I should mention is something that we started up at Lake of the Woods about 13 years ago, and it's called Keep It Clean. And what Keep It Clean is it's a whole effort by a coalition of stakeholders to basically keep garbage and waste off of the ice. So give a little history. Back about 13 years ago, the Friends of Zippo Bay State Park, which is a beautiful, beautiful state park on the south side of Lake of the Woods, they would always do an annual beach cleanup when ice went out. In 1 year, they got like 4 trailer loads full of garbage that blew in. And they said to themselves, my goodness, how much sink? What would happen? What happens to this stuff if it's not blown in the right direction? And this is one small part of Lake of the Woods. So they notified Mike Hurst of Lake of the Woods Soil and Water Conservation District. And Mike pulled together a group of stakeholders. And I'm Lake of the Woods Tourism, of course. I'm a licensed charter captain. And they pulled together DNR Fisheries, DNR Enforcement, Lake of the Woods County, Roseau County, some others. And, you know, basically we have a whole group of stakeholders that started this movement. And, you know, we started out by, you know, having dumpsters at popular ice accesses. Then we found out that, you know, we had to empty those dumpsters so often we couldn't afford to keep up with it. Plus, we had so much theft of service. There was little businesses that were running sleeper fish houses and different things that were putting garbage in there instead of, you know, paying to get it disposed of from the stuff. Local cabin owners were putting in, you know, old stuff they didn't want or if they had a construction project. And it's just naturally those dumpsters are sitting out in the open and they're kind of a magnet, right? So no harm, no foul. But we realized over time that, you know, we're not going to be in the garbage removal business. But rather what we did is we got rid of those dumpsters and we just really encouraged people to have a plan when they go in the lake. And we encouraged our resort community to offer services. If you're offering paid services to customers, offer them an option for using the restroom and for garbage. And, you know, the majority of them have really stepped up nicely. And so there's different ways. We became an educational and a promotional organization and even a grassroots lobbying organization. So fast forward to today, that was 13 years ago. We got the word out. We got a logo. We got a website. Put the word out. Keep it clean. Keep it clean. Keep it clean. Plan ahead. Bring garbage bags with you. Not white garbage bags. Use black or colored. You know, where are you going to use the restroom? Make sure you take it off with you. If you pack it in, pack it out. You know, all these things. Billboards. Signage on the ice. Geofencing. So if somebody drives out on Lake of the Woods, if they get out to a certain point and they cross an invisible line, when they're checking their cell phone out in the fish house, they might get an ad that says, hey, when you're on Lake of the Woods, remember to keep it clean. We did all these different things, right? Well, all of a sudden we started getting phone calls. We got a phone call from Upper Red Lake. Hey, you got this Keep It Clean program. We have the same kind of problems you do, you know, with humans on the ice, right? Ice fishing's great. But you also have the challenges that go with a lot of humans on the ice. You have waste, garbage, and you have waste. Then we got a call from Mille Lacs Lake. And then, you know, we kind of talked about it in our group and said, hey, you know, when it comes to Keep It Clean, we're not competitors at all, man. We're partners in success. Instead of going down this road, we got a 10-year start on you. Instead of going down this road on your own, just join us. What we did is we came up with an agreement that said, hey, we're not going to charge you any money, but sign this agreement that says you're not going to alter the logo. We want to keep consistent branding like any good organization does. And any kind of messaging that you put out there, if it's different than what we provide you, please get it approved by us. The reason I did that is because I saw some messaging that wasn't real couth when it came to human waste. I think people thought they were being funny, but it was kind of gross. So anyway, we did that, and my goodness, in today's world, 2 years ago, we went to the state legislature. We had bipartisan support for a Keep It Clean law in Minnesota. That new law was passed. Now in the state of Minnesota, it is now illegal to place any kind of garbage or waste on or below the ice. You have to keep it in your fish house, in your vehicle, or an enclosed container. Now, the reason that's important is because, you know, there's a small group of people that are just pigs. They don't care, right? That's a small group. There's a lot of really, really good people that mean well, that were leaving trash behind and maybe even waste behind and didn't even really think about it. You know, they might say, hey, listen, we're going to be on the ice for a few nights. Let's just set our garbage bags outside the door here. We'll pick them up certainly when we go. Well, then, you know, some of the bags are warm when you set them down, so they freeze in. So the next time you lift them, all the garbage goes out. You know, a lot of people use white garbage bags. Well, guess what? They blend in with the snow. So when people leave, instead of getting four garbage bags, they forgot one and only got three. You know, you have people that you have birds that get into them and tear them open. You got wind, high winds that blow some of the garbage away. You know, when people leave their fish houses, maybe they had them blocked up and those blocks are frozen in. They just let those wood blocks in the ice rather than taking a chisel and taking 2 minutes to pop them out and bringing them with them. All these different things, right? So now, you know, we have conservation officers in the state of Minnesota that are very happy we have that law because now they have something tuned for us. We have a lot of people that would do annual cleanups in March when the ice is going out, whether they're conservation officers or other, you know, lake associations or other groups. And they have said since that Keep It Clean law kicked in a couple of years ago, holy man, we have seen less garbage on that ice. So just by happenstance, the fact that that garbage cannot touch the ice, we believe that tons of garbage is no longer going into the ice or going onto the ice, which will go into the lakes. So I had a chance to do some seminars down in Iowa. So I spoke to the Iowa Great Lakes Fishing Club. Great, great group of anglers down in Iowa near Lake Okoboji. And Terry Thompson's the president. And I spoke to Terry about our Keep It Clean up in Minnesota. My goodness. And I said, Terry, you should start this in Iowa. Well, he's a good leader. And he took the bull by the horns. My goodness, if he didn't start Keep It Clean in Iowa around that Lake Okoboji area, they got a whole bunch of support with organizations. They created a logo similar to ours, but a little bit different. And now they can deal with their own Iowa DNR and the different stakeholders and work together to keep all those wonderful lakes in Iowa, you know, as clean as possible. And, you know, why reinvent the wheel? If something's working, let's just share that information and let it spread. And, and that's what's happened. So it's really kind of a success story when it comes to, you know, ice fishing and conservation. I'll give you an example. You know, we got each year on Lake of the Woods, they estimate that we have about 2.5 to 3 million angling hours just for ice fishing alone. You know, we have about 4,000 people in Lake of the Woods County. You know what? On a busy given weekend, it's estimated that we could have as many as 10,000 people on the ice. And, you know, don't get me wrong. It's a lot of people, but we have a huge, huge, huge body of water. So it's not like you're on top of each other at all. I mean,
yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, you hear those numbers for anywhere else, which they don't happen anywhere else. But you hear those numbers for anywhere else or anything like it, and you're just thinking, oh, that place is overrun. But not Lake of the Woods.
No, it's not. Well, and it's kind of cool too because so since we you know, we allowed other areas to come on board with us, we now have over 60 organizations in the state of Minnesota representing over 1,500 lakes that are covered by Keep It Clean.
That is very neat. And, you know, and that stuff kind of goes unsung a little bit, but it adds so much to the experience. You know, people notice that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it just adds to the experience. It makes you feel way better about booking a trip again.
Hey, like, amen.
It's a huge deal.
I'm no tree hugger, you know, and I say that with all respect, but I'm no tree hugger. I'm not one of these guys. It's all about the environment. I'm radical. And no. I hunt and I fish and I try to be level headed on stuff, but you know what? It's a level headed outdoors person. You know, we all got to do our part because as more and more people get in the outdoors, which is fantastic, that's what we want, right? For so many reasons. But you know what? We got to do our part to make sure that we're taking care of it and we're not going to have it. And, you know, keeping that stuff out of our lakes, it was kind of cool. My colleague at Mille Lacs Lake, Ann Bruciani-Lyon, who runs a Keep It Clean program down there, they actually had a team of divers come and clean up the bottom of the lake to see what was down there from the, not only ice fishing, but even just other stuff. And that's a whole other story, but it was really kind of cool to find out, to see what they found down there and some of the different cleanup they've done. That group initially started doing some of that on Lake Tahoe, and they came to Lake Mille Lacs and did it. So it was kind of neat, but it's a success story for sure. And, you know, just, much like we were talking about MinFish earlier offline, that organization that creates more quality sport fishing in the state of Minnesota, you know, we're talking about MinFish, how that group could be duplicated throughout other states. You know, really, just like Iowa has taken this on, our Keep It Clean program could be replicated or duplicated in other states too. And, you know, I would just say, if anybody's listening to this and would want to start your own Keep It Clean program in neighboring states, get a hold of us and we'll happily share information with you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. That is really cool. And it's definitely part of that whole evolution conversation. You look back in history, these are the things that are making big impacts.
Oh, man. And, you know, when it comes to Keep It Clean, I mean, we have bipartisan support. Of course, we had to get it done at the legislature. We found some good, advocates at the legislature, both sides of the aisle. You know, we had, of course, the Minnesota DNR is behind it. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is behind it. Other nonprofits that deal with, water, Minnesota lakes and rivers. I mean, just a number of organizations got behind this thing. So it sailed through pretty nicely. And even today, there's different grants that are being offered for Keep It Clean. And we have all these different areas now are putting signage at popular ice accesses. They're putting up billboards. They're finding areas. They're finding ways to have winter dump stations for these really nice wheelhouses now that have heated holding tanks with chemicals and human waste in them from me being out fishing on the ice. What a nice convenience, but you have to have a place to dump them, right? And there's a lot of things going on, man, but it's keeping up with the times.
All right, man. Well, one thing that we should close this out on, it's another kind of a unique portion of the Lake of the Woods conversation with you is, we're kind of in that early ice early ice fishing season. But Lake of the Woods always has like the longest season in all of Minnesota, and the late ice and all that. I want to talk a little bit about kind of the progression of the season. Again, just kind of sort of depicting just the extent of the opportunities up there, and just like how the whole ice season lays out, and what those opportunities are. I don't think we can totally cap off this conversation without kind of giving that part of the story as well for anybody that doesn't fully understand the extent of the ice fishing season on Lake of the Woods.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. You know, we're unique because we're border water with Minnesota, so our rules are just a bit different than the rest of the state of Minnesota, and they're more extended than what they are. So to give an example, when it comes to ice fishing in general, because we're so far north, we normally start earlier than others and we can end later than others. So on average, when people say, hey, when do you normally start, when do resorts get fish houses out? I normally use the date of December 10th. December 10th, give or take based on Mother Nature, but December 10th is normally when we get our day houses out. Now, this year it ended up being like the 8th or 9th of December, depending upon which resort and which part of the South End you're on. But, you know, so it was right on track this year. Not only that, you know, the majority of the state of Minnesota, you can have fish houses out on the ice overnight through the month of February or thereabouts. Up at Lake of the Woods, we get a whole extra month. So we can have fish houses out overnight on the ice through March 31st. That's a bonus, that extended season, a whole nother month of ice fishing. In addition, you know, we have some seasons for fish that are much longer. For instance, in the rest of the state of Minnesota, you know, the pike and walleye season typically end at the end of February. Up at Lake of the Woods, our pike season never ends. It's continuous. And the walleye season goes all the way through April 14th. So we really do have some nice opportunities for extended ice fishing. And, you know, for people that enjoy that, or for people that said, hey, listen, you know, we do the majority of our ice fishing near home. But, you know, for that month of March, wouldn't it be fun to buzz up in early to mid-March and get that that bonus ice fishing trip in up at Lake of the Woods? And that can be, of course, a really good time to fish. Fish are starting to put the feed bags on, you know, for the upcoming spawn. days are getting longer. You know, you can have a really nice day where you got to be careful you don't get sunburned if you go out on the ice. And you can have a blizzard. I mean, you know, where it feels like, oh my gosh, it feels like January is so cold out here. You know, so you get everything in March. But that's kind of the way March is. And we get some really good ice fishing typically. The other thing is, you know, people like chasing pike with tip-ups. Boy, I'd say March is the time to do it. I mean, you know, pike normally are not a schooling fish. But I'll tell you, in March, they start heading towards their spawning areas. And they end up getting congregated in pre-spawn areas, areas that are adjacent to their spawning areas. And that's when anglers go after them with tip-ups, using use two tip-ups in two lines in the state of Minnesota ice fishing. So most will have a couple of tip-ups, and you set those out there with a quick strike rig, and you hang either a live sucker or maybe an alewife or a smelt underneath there. Some people will, you know, put one, they'll lay it on the mud in the bottom and watch those pike come in and grab a big mouth of mud and that big dead bait, just like they would hibernating frogs. Some will hang it up a couple feet off the bottom. Some will put one right below the ice. There's different techniques. You know, these pike are swimming. They're predators, but they're also scavengers. And, you know, you kind of get those pike dialed in. And at our pike, you know, I mentioned earlier, 30 to 40 inches, you got to throw them, put them back. You got to keep pike under 30 inches, three, or one over 40. Well, you know what? Because of that, it's managed to be a trophy pike fishery. And the number of pike we have over 40 inches is phenomenal. And that's why people go after them. They don't really go up there to keep a lot of fish to eat them. They certainly can, and they're great. Pickle them, you flay them up, whatever. But most people go up there to catch a fish of a lifetime, a 44, 45-incher, great big fish. Head feel that power, get that picture, that big slob, freaking.
Yeah.
Two hands, hard to pull it out of the hole, hold that sucker up, get some good pictures, get that fish back and let her go back.
Yeah, a lot of big fish get caught in March on Lake of the Woods. Yep. There's no doubt about it. But I feel like, you know, I got to ask you those questions now, because if I wait till March to talk about it, like, it's too late, you know.
People
it's like,
can't plan.
Yeah, people, they love hearing about it then because it's happening, but but they got no time to plan. It's like, we have to talk about it now. And, you know, if nobody got anything out of this conversation other than, I want to catch a pike of a lifetime. Like, just pay attention to this portion of the conversation because, but yeah, a lot of big fish of all those species, a lot of big fish get caught in March, longer days. And like you said, that daytime bite never goes away. Like that's just the way Lake of the Woods is built. So when you get to March and the days are longer, you're just capitalizing on a bigger bite window.
Amen to that.
With that daytime. I mean, it's just, yeah, March is, yeah, it's like any time is good to go on Lake of the Woods for so many reasons, but that later ice season when everybody else, when everybody else is putting their own stuff away, and you know the resorts have what you need. You could put all your stuff away, totally put all your stuff away. Just pack a bag, get in the car, and go. And
it's cool, you know, when you get towards the end of March, you'll go to a local gas station, and you'll pull up with your ice fishing gear and get some fuel and stuff, and there'll be a boat, motor, and trailer next to you.
Fishing
30 miles east of Bidette out of Birchdale where the water's open, you know, and they're fishing the Rainy River for walleye. So it's kind of a fun time, too. It's kind of a transition time that way. And, it's just neat. You know, I should say, too, you know, we'd mentioned earlier that we do have a couple of bars out on the ice. And if you're up at Lake of the Woods, regardless of which resort you're staying at, don't be afraid to check out the Igloo Bar, which is about 3 miles out of Zippel Bay Resort. It's 3 miles out on the ice. It's a 1,000-square-foot bar, got two big-screen TVs, has an instant ATM machine, has a full bar, partial hot menu. You can get some hot food in there. And, oh, by the way, you can also fish in the bar. I mean, how many bartenders, you know, have a live bucket of minnows? For five bucks an hour, you can rent a fish hole with a rod or reel, or you can bring your own line and jig if you want. And so you got people in there that are jigging. They're having their favorite beverage. They got the maybe a sporting event, or maybe a hockey game, basketball game, or something on the TV. Of course, it's real festive in there. People like to go in just to see it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just cool as heck. You know, a lot of times they'll have a fire going in the barrel out in front. I asked Nick Painovich, owner of Zippel Bay Resort. I said, hey, Nick, gets kind of festive there when somebody catches a walleye. He says, you should see what happens when somebody loses one. You can imagine how the place goes nuts, you know. Now, Jenny, the normal bartender who starts at noon, she first thing she does when she comes in, puts a big Sacramento down. At Zippel Bay, that Igloo Bar is located right on Zippel Reef. So it's on some structure. And every year she puts that Sacramento down. Every year she'll catch 3 pike over 40 inches, it seems. And that's a big pike out of a bar, you know. And
if you were there when that happened, boy, that'd be unreal.
Oh, it's awesome. It gets real exciting. A lot of pictures. She feels like paparazzi, you know. And that's kind of cool. Then the second bar, ice bar, is called the Angry Walleye. And that's located on Bostic Bay. Actually, it's out on the lake, but just it's right out of Cyrus Resort, which is located in Bostic Bay, at just on the south end of Lake of the Woods. But the Angry Walleye, boy, you know, you go in there and you want to hear fish stories. Go in the Angry Walleye at about 5 o'clock when people are coming off the ice. Everybody likes to stop in there and have their favorite beverage. They got their real good pizzas that Cyrus makes in there, getting cooked up by the, you know, by the dozens, I guess I would say. And, you know, it's just kind of a fun place to stop in. And again, another ice bar, not quite as big, but they got a big screen TV. Usually some real good tunes are being played in there. And again, it's way out on Lake of the Woods. So it's kind of a novelty.
Yeah, man. It adds to the experience. That's it, man. Well, very cool. I like all those things. I think are just so, it's important. I feel like, you know, to have these conversations this time of year, every year when people are, ice fishing is on our mind, but there's still so much of the year left that they can do some planning and they can think about where they might want to go. And if they've never been to Lake of the Woods, to be able to talk about the extent of the opportunities up there. And it's just such a plug and play destination. And the history of it is really, really cool. There's just so many different storylines that, that just add to the evolution that, you know, Lake of the Woods has gone through over the years. And it's all that stuff is fascinating, especially when you've gone up there and you've fished a little bit. You kind of feel like you've got a little bit of knowledge of a place, or, you know, you kind of get, it kind of grows on you, and it's such a great personal memory of you. And then knowing those little things that have happened over time are just cool. And a little bit of that history is just fun. But absolutely, Joe, all good, man. We'll talk to you.
Listen, I appreciate everything. Merry Christmas to you, brother.
Yep, you too. Bye now.
Okay, thanks, Taylor. Bye.